Nature Fix is proudly sponsored by Craghoppers, one of the UK's favourite outdoor gear experts. Craghoppers and the National Trust have joined forces to create a collection inspired by nature and designed for life. Sales from the range help to support the National Trust's vital work, restoring some of our incredible natural landscapes, from delicate wetlands to boggy peatlands. Together, we are working to look after nature and care for our landscapes for generations to come. Hello and welcome to Nature Fix with me, Claire Hickenbotham. Every month, we take you with us as we meet the people who spend their time outside and join them in a place that most inspires them. The morning sun is just about peeping over the spectacular hills of Hardcastle Crags in West Yorkshire. And I'm in search of Steve Hindle, a man who spends a lot of time with his head down looking for rare and unusual and often very brightly coloured fungi. Steve didn't train for this job, but a natural intrigue and regular dog walks in the area meant his passion developed and eventually led to his hobby becoming a full-time career. So let's catch up with Steve and his mushroom-hunting dog on a fungi hunt. We've parked up at the top of a stunning valley. It's the end of November, but it's one of those crisp winter mornings. It's so still and so quiet, and there's just a smattering of farm buildings and farm cottages. This is the epitome of a rural, remote landscape. And Steve is somewhere around here. Hi, you must be Steve.
I am, hello.
Nice to meet you. And who's this you've brought with you?
So this is Meg.
Hi, Meg.
She's my mushroom hunting dog. Well, I wish. Generally, she's just wandering around looking for a carcass to gnaw on. But she keeps me company and she's very good.
She's a lovely thing. Is she a lab?
She is, yeah. She's a black lab, 11 years old, still in fine fettle.
She's very pretty, aren't you? You're a very pretty doggy. So when you go about trying to find fungi, the field that we're stood in at the moment has a few sheep in it, a few sheep droppings, a lot of grass and a few mounds. So what's the starting point?
Well, the idea is a lot of walking around.
Okay.
So I basically start at the bottom of the field and I walk across the field and then I turn around, go up a metre maybe, and I go back across the field and I'm just staring at the ground.
So you're scouring a crime scene almost.
I am. It's very, very CSI.
So can we find something today?
Absolutely. So I've been here surveying this morning and we've got some amazing species in here. So we'll just have to have a little look around, see if I can remember where I saw them, and then hopefully we'll see something.
What exactly are we looking for? What does it look like? Is it fairy tale red and white? Halloween, you always hear about the... Is it witch's fingers that look like fingers coming out of the ground?
There is dead man's fingers and dead mole's fingers. And the one that you're talking about, the fly agaric, the red and white one, they're all woodland species. So the fly agaric is a mycorrhizal species with pine and birch trees.
What does mycorrhizal mean?
Mycorrhizal means that there's an association between a tree and the fungus. So they're in a symbiotic relationship. The tree's providing sugars for the fungus is providing nutrients. The dead man's fingers, for example, and the candle snuff fungus, they're decomposers, so they're rotting down wood. Most of the ones that we're looking for are symbionts. So they're like mycorrhizal, but they're in relationships with grasses, flowering plants, and they're restricted to ancient grassland. And that's grassland which has not been disturbed either physically or chemically for hundreds of years, basically. So the best fields that we find have been in this kind of management, grazed, or they may be hay meadows, and that's been going on for generations, maybe medieval period or even before that.
Let's walk on, but
sure.
I'm really interested to hear about how you got into this line of work. Have you always done this?
So no, actually for most of my adult life I've been involved in circus kind of stuff. Basically, prior to this I was making circus equipment, but
right.
Predominantly hula hoops, because once people realised that the kind of hoops that I was making for circus performers were actually good for exercise, then you know, that business started to take off. But prior to that, I was running a circus shop, teaching circus skills. And that's my background.
So how do you make the leap from teaching circus skills and making specialist hula hoops into identifying rare species of fungi?
I'd always had dogs when I was younger, and I got a dog, and I started going out for walks in the countryside, and then when you're doing that, you're seeing things all the time. So it started off with me just thinking, why do I know the name of some of these trees, but I don't know other ones? So I got a little guidebook and started to learn about trees, and then I started to learn about flowers and grasses and ferns, and then autumn comes around, and then it's like, what are all these mushrooms, you know? And again, some of them I knew, but most of them I didn't. So I started studying, learning, collecting. That was all really woodland-based because that's the place that you think of the fungi as being. But then I came out into some of the grasslands and started to see all of these amazing fungi that we've got in the grasslands. And I just kind of got a little bit obsessed with them, actually, and never really went back into the woods again.
You live locally then, and this was your patch to walk the dog, and that's how it all started?
That's it, yeah.
And then how do you go from it being your dog walk to it being your entire life, your job, your career?
So I joined the local natural history group, the Halifax Scientific Society. Then I started going out with the council biodiversity officer to carry out surveys of sites that they were looking at. People here at the Trust knew of me as a local person who was interested in these fungi. And so when the job application came along, I actually just got in touch to say, whoever you get in this role, I can help out with that. And Craig, who put the role forward, said, so do you not want to apply for the job? And I was like, no, I'm self-employed, got my own business. I don't have a qualification in ecology, which it says you need. And he kind of talked to me and said, well, you know, when you put out a job advert, you can't get everything that you want. And actually the most important aspect of this is probably somebody who's really good at identifying these species. So eventually I thought, right, okay, I'm going to apply for the job. And then I got the role.
Here you are.
Here I am. But it was a big step, you know. You've got to close up your own business, although I do still make a few hula hoops now and again. But yeah.
Any regrets?
No. I get permission to go into the fields that I've been eyeing up for many years and look around and find amazing things. So it's absolutely fantastic.
So, should we start moving across the field?
Sure. Definitely no, I've got something that I can show you over here.
Okay. So how big is this one that we're looking for? Am I going to see it or are you going to point it out?
I'm going to point it out to you, but when you see it, you will...
No.
You will know, yeah. What is purple?
Purple?
Yeah, we've got quite a few purple ones, actually. And it's an unusual colour to see in nature, so when you see it, it really stands out to you.
Oh, wow.
So this is called violet coral.
Yes, so I was going to say it looks like, coral. It's almost a clump.
Exactly. So you might think of fungi as being mushrooms generally, but in these ones that we're looking at, we've got quite a lot, which are clubs, spindles, corals. And in these fields, we've got a number of different named corals, but this one is a really rare one. If you were to Google this, you would find lots of newspaper headlines saying rare fungus found in such and such a place. So although there are quite a few records across the UK, actually the UK is one of the most important places in the world for these kinds of fungi because we've got the habitat for them. We've got that temperate influence coming across the Atlantic. We get all the rain, but it's fairly mild. So in the UK, we've got more of these than anywhere else in the world. And this, in association with a few other species, I'll be able to show you, tells you that it's a really incredible sight.
We're not just here to see the violet coral.
Oh, no.
It supports lots of different fungi.
That's right. And these species tend to form a community. So this particular one, the violet coral, is the only one of the corals which is on the International Union Conservation of Nature Red List. So that's the global Red List. So you might hear about species that are threatened with extinction, like a polar bear, snow leopard, giant panda. This is in the same category of those. This is vulnerable to extinction. So in this area, West Yorkshire, I've recorded 32 species which are vulnerable to extinction, two species which are endangered. So these are really, really special.
So these are as rare as a snow leopard?
They're as threatened as a snow leopard. So the population may be less or more. There is a species which I found in a nearby field, which there's only one record of in the world. But we don't know how threatened it is because we've not been able to monitor population trends. So that's what the threat level tells you. It's about how quickly that population is declining. So these are disappearing fast. So it's only when somebody who knows what they're looking for comes in, looks around and can find these things that we then start to learn the value of these sites and what we've got. And it's really important that we do that. And so if people are out and about in grassland, particularly, and see red mushrooms, yellow mushrooms, orange mushrooms, they're going to be the wax caps. And it's really important that they try and let somebody know about that. Or Plant Life have an app called the Wax Cap app. And you can record then the colours that you're finding. So you don't need to know what the species is. You just need to think, that's a red one, that's a yellow one, that's a green one. And then they are able to use that information to kind of map and find out where the hotspots are. And then somebody like me can go into those hotspots, do a survey, and then we get a real sense of what the value is of that site.
Got you. Let's move on. But sure. As we go across the field and we start zigzagging back and forth.
Yep.
Just tell me what a wax cap is.
So the wax caps are mushrooms, and they are the kind of classic example of these kind of fungi. So some of them are quite large, you can see them from the road, and they're also the easiest to identify. And in fact, I've created an app which you can get for iPhones and Android, which is called Peachy Steve's UK Wax Caps. And if you think you have a wax cap, that will help you then to identify which one it is or give you a pretty good idea.
Can I ask you a question that someone who was more au fait with fungi and mushrooms probably wouldn't need to ask? But why are they so brightly coloured? Why are they so unusual in their shape? Why are they so different in nature to anything else?
It's a really good question, and it's one that we don't have the answer to. It may be that some of them may rely on a relationship with an insect, potentially, that's attracted to them, but I really don't think we know the answer to that. And the colours can change, so the parrot wax cap is typically green and yellow. If we have a look on my app, if we go to the parrot wax cap entry, this is a blue parrot wax cap. It's a very rare colour form. Yeah, this is the typical form, the green and yellow.
Green and yellow, they're quite bright colours again, aren't they? And they've got
that,
the underside of it is the same as you'd see in a mushroom that you bought in the supermarket.
Yeah, so they're called the gills or lamellae. And in the wax caps, they tend to be quite widely spaced. So if you compare that to your field mushroom, it's got very, very crowded gills. Here you can see the space in between each one. But one that I'd found, it was on a frosty day, and the frost seems to change the colours of things. And this one had every colour of the rainbow in order from top to bottom.
In order?
In order. When we think of the colours of the rainbow, that's to do with light being refracted. But why should these pigments go through that same colour change in order? That makes no sense to me. Well, I just want to show you one of the wax caps. Now, the wax caps generally are brightly coloured, but this one isn't. It'd be very easy to mistake this one for a lump of dung.
It does look like a lump of dung, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. So, but when we turn it over, then you can see
the gills.
The gills. We've got the gills, we've got this mushroom form, and actually, if we just bruise the gills a little bit, these are still grey, then we can see them just start to turn red.
We've moved into another field.
We have. This field is particularly good, actually, for one of the waxcap species, which is the crimson waxcap. And the crimson waxcap is another species which is on the IUCN vulnerable list. So this one, again, is vulnerable to extinction. But it's one which can be quite abundant. And particularly in this field, there can be loads of them.
So it's not very different from the field where we've been?
It's not, no. And I couldn't tell you why it is that we would find one species predominating in one field and not in another field. Could be something to do with the hydrology, you know, the way the water's moving, or nutrient levels, the depth of the soil. There's all kinds of factors. But actually, just over there on the brow of the hill, there's big kind of red things.
Yeah, can we get a bit closer?
Let's hone in on those and have a close look at them. Right, okay. You can see on the top they've got this kind of quite fleshy coloured...
Almost like a tongue. It looks like a tongue to me.
Yeah, well, that's it. They're very kind of fleshy colour, but as they fade, they can look quite visceral. And in the way that you're saying it looks like a tongue, that's because it's got a greasy kind of feel to it. And that's to do with the cell structure on the top.
But also the kind of shape of it as well. It's not a perfect circle, is it?
Some of them are nice and round. Some of them are a little more kind of off-kilter. But if we just pick one out here and turn it over, just look at the stem with all of these kind of red fibrils on. And that's a really distinctive feature of this species. Most of them have got a smooth stem. There's a few with a kind of, this is called fibrillose stem, but this one with the kind of yellow base and then these red fibres over the top of it. Very specific to this species. So that's the crimson waxcap. And in fact, I've got one other thing that I'd like to show you because I think this one's going to blow you away.
Okay. I'm starting to understand why, when you talked about how you started walking Meg here, the dog, and you started noticing the nature around you and you saw a tree, you knew what it was, and then you moved on to something else and then you moved on to the fungi. They're so varied from one another, aren't they? They're so pretty and the colours are so bright and vibrant.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the forms and the colours. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it is that's so captivating about them, but just hooked me in. And some of them as well have got incredible smells. So there's one which is called the cedarwood waxcap. And actually, we had a staff day and we do a kind of show and tell. So we all bring something in. And this cedarwood waxcap, what I tend to do is to help with the training sessions. When I find one, I stick it in a little tin. And then after a couple of days, I take it out of the tin. And then I stick another one in the tin because I'm finding them quite a bit. And the tin then takes on this smell. And so in our show and tell, I pass this empty tin around and said, so, you know, what does this smell of? And interestingly, about 50% of people just can't smell anything at all. So they're just, nothing, there's nothing there. But those that can smell it, it's absolutely amazing. And it's the smell that they used to use toasted birch oil to cure Russian leather. And they use that in some men's luxury fragrances.
What's the reason why we don't know why they smell?
So some of them smell of honey. There's quite a few that have a honey smell. And there's one that they say smells of bed bugs.
Nice.
Which fortunately most of us don't know what bed bugs smell of, but it's a kind of oily smell, you know. And then there's the garlic wax cap, which has a little bit of a smell of garlic. They're just so kind of sensory, you know, with the feelings and the smells, and some of them have got taste to them as well, and the caps are going to be slippery or glutinous or dry, and yeah, it's just great.
Well, we're nearly back to where we started. Have you got anything else you need to show me?
This one last thing that I want to show you, which I just found today, it's a really rare one. It's absolutely stunning. Let's see if you can spot it over there in the grass.
Okay, so I mean, there's a little speck of blue among the green grass. So I'm guessing that's what we're heading
that's
for.
That's it, yeah. So this one is called Entoloma medidum, or the bright sky pinkgill. It's really kind of intense blue. Now, this one's a nice, young, fresh one. But you can also see, if we turn it over, you can see that kind of pink colour in the gills.
So it's very fleshy pink, isn't it?
Yeah. And so they're called the pinkgills. But the gills don't start out pink, but the spores are pink, much like the field mushroom, which when you get a young one, it's got pink gills, but then they turn dark over time. That's because it's got dark brown, black spores. This has got pink spores.
And can we just for a moment talk about the vibrancy of this blue? I mean, that is a blue you would not expect to find in nature, is it?
It's not, no. And again, you asked before, why? Why do we have these colours? And we just don't know. You would think if you were trying to mind your own business and drop your spores without getting eaten or squashed, being bright blue wouldn't necessarily be a good idea. But it may be that animals go, bright blue thing, that's not edible, so I'll ignore it. I'm not entirely sure. Have you come for a look, Meg?
Hi, Meg.
You like these as well, don't you?
Is she good at sniffing them out if they've got...
Terrible, absolutely. Oh. She's no interest in mushrooms whatsoever.
But you've just talked about the smells, and in theory that's what dogs do.
Well, interestingly, last year, my partner and I were out, and she found a really rare wax cap called the scaly foot wax cap. It was absolutely amazing, and I took it home and dried it out. And I had it lying down on the table, and I got in touch with Martin Ainsworth at Kew Gardens and said, look, I've got this fantastic sample of this rare wax cap. Would you like the specimen? And he said, looks amazing. Please send it to me. I'd love to have that in our fungarium. And I went into the room the next morning, gone. Meg had eaten it.
No. So she sniffed that one out then.
She sniffed that one out. And she did eat a couple the other day, which have got a bit of a honey scent. So she maybe thought, they smell sweet. I'll have those. But otherwise, generally, she's not interested.
Oh, bless her. Right, my knees are getting soggy, so shall we stand up?
So, but again, this is another one which is threatened with extinction. And this was one which was known as the big blue pinkgill, Entoloma bloxamii. But then they noticed that actually there were quite a few different forms of this, and so they did DNA work and they split it into four different species. And those four different species, we've recorded three of them in this area. But this one is certainly the most amazing one to look at.
It's incredible, isn't
yeah,
it?
Fantastic.
It's almost
colours.
Like a Smurf.
Yeah, it is like a Smurf. I've never thought of that, but yeah, that'll do.
Well, it's been amazing to meet you. Thank you so much for showing us what you do.
Yeah, pleasure.
I guess we're going to leave you to zigzag some more, are we?
Yeah.
And I'll head back.
Sure.
Where I came from.
Enjoy your day.
Thank you so much. It's been really interesting.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to this episode of Nature Fix. If you love your nature, why not check out our other nature podcast, Wild Tales, with Rosie Holdsworth and Ajay Tagala. And I look forward to seeing you next month as we head outside again for another fix of nature. Bye for now. Nature Fix is proudly sponsored by outdoor gear experts, Craghoppers. Heading out for adventure? Discover Craghoppers' National Trust range of clothing and accessories. Inspired by nature and designed to last, each item in the collection comes with a guarantee for life. And with every purchase, you're helping to support the Trust's vital work restoring our natural landscapes. Get ready for your journey outdoors at craghoppers.com/national-trust.